hit with you on the fan, 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. Now, what game do we have here? Oh, it's the same game. I thought it was over already. I saw Don Mattingly. I'm like, oh, they're playing another Yankee vintage game. I like it. As we go to the, I guess this, we go to the 13th.
Yankees stranding runner since 2004.
Yeah, exactly. Bernie Williams can't come through in the clutch. Get him off the team, will you? What have you done for me lately, Bernie?
They did just that. They got rid of him.
He played in 2005. I think that was the last year.
I think 06, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 06 against the Tigers, 100%. And that ridiculous series, my least favorite. I hated that. That's probably, as much as obviously the Red Sox series is the Red Sox series in 2004, and then the 01 World Series probably hurt the most in the moment. The one that sticks in my craw the most, because I didn't think they were a team as nearly as good as the Yankees, is that 06 Tigers team. That was the epitome of Murderer's Row plus Cano. They dominate game one and then can't win again against that lousy Tiger team that damn near blew the division, or did blow the division, to the Minnesota Twins. I mean, just disgusting. Disgusting! I'll never... And Kenny Rogers, talk about the day of sticky stuff as we're, you know, dealing with a 10-game suspension for Diaz and the Mets. Kenny Rogers has got just pine tar or whatever it is all over his face. Ridiculous. But that's not neither here nor there today. 888-808-1019. Let's talk about the Giants for a second real quick, because later today will be the premiere of Hard Knocks Offseason Edition. And apparently they're going to lean heavy into the ordeal that leads to Saquon Barkley leaving and joining the Philadelphia Eagles. And I'm telling you right now, they are going to defend Daniel Jones. I know this. I'm promising you, we're going to hear so much great things about Daniel Jones. But with this Giant team, there's been a lot of turmoil about the head coach. And I just want to talk about Brian Daboll for a second. And I forgot to mention it to Rami, but we're going to get some audio in a bit. Art Stapleton has it of a player talking about Brian Daboll and his offensive ability in calling plays. So Brian Daboll last year, 2 years ago, he changed the franchise. 2 years ago, Brian Daboll showed up, and instantly it felt like they have a coach. It was game one in Tennessee against the Titans. Daniel Jones throws a bad pick. We all know the story. Daniel Jones throws a bad pick in the end zone, and he gets in his face. And he's yelling at him. He gets in his face. And from that moment on, Daniel Jones stopped turning the ball over. And this team played the only good season of football they have played in what feels like a decade. Pretty damn close to a decade. And it felt like, after having the Ben McAdoo, Pat Shermers, and of course, the great Joe Judges of the world, it felt like finally there's a coach. Finally, this team is found. Whatever else happens along the way, whether Daniel Jones turns out to be the guy or not, whatever happens, at least they have a culture. They have a coach. They're moving in the right direction. They got rid of Gettleman. Joe Shane, they're bringing winning Buffalo South. That's what we, after year one, he was the toast of the town, NFL Coach of the Year, and the Giants were on their way. And then what happened to the Giants, the same thing that's happened to them year after year after year, is that despite any optimism, and believe me, there was optimism last year, some of the same stuff we're hearing now. I'm getting call after call about, hey, you know what? We're under the radar. Nobody's talking about the Giants. Well, now they're going to be in Hard Knocks, so I think everyone will be talking about the Giants. But last year it was like, let the Jets do Hard Knocks. Let them have Aaron Rodgers. Let's talk nothing about that. While the Giants just quietly go about building their winning team. And obviously they fell flat on their face. Fell flat on their face from the opening game of 40-0. Just absolute disaster. And not only was it just a disaster on the field, Brian Daboll took a hit. There's no two ways about. There's no two ways around it. Brian Daboll and his inability to control his staff, the stories that come out about him and Wink and screaming and people don't want to play for him, and there are leaks inside the defensive coaching staff, and you know he's taking away and giving back and taking away and giving back play calling duties from Kafka, who was a young coach that everybody seems to think very highly of. He's getting head coaching jobs as an offensive coordinator. And so entering this year, Brian Daboll, who, by the way, looks great, lost a ton of weight, looks fantastic. I'm happy for him. I got to find out what he's doing. Something tells me, you know, eating right and working out. But maybe I'll try that one day. But after all the Wink Martindale stuff, screaming in his face, telling him to go F himself and walking out of the building, to finding out that he's screaming at players on and he's unhelpful. I mean, that's how it was portrayed. That on headset, he is unhelpful during the games. That he yells without providing answers. That he's just demanding without helping. And that it caused a real problem on the sidelines. And when I heard that, I thought to myself, okay, he's a young coach who has dealt with losing before. I mean, he's lost in Buffalo, but he comes from New England. He comes from Alabama. So ultimately, maybe not that good at losing. And he's a young coach. And despite having a great year one, he doesn't have all the answers. And he's going to have to grow as a head coach. And I think he was well within his right to try and fire any coach he deemed on the defensive side of the ball that was undermining him and going to the media with stories about him and Wink. I think he had every right to fire that coach, and he had every right to move on from Wink Martindale. He's the coach. They work for him. He's the guy whose ass is on the line. There's no other way to put it. And when I heard specifically about him and the play calling and taking it away from Kafka and giving it back to Kafka and yelling about the play calling and not being helpful, there's two ways to go about it. One way is to calm down, be less animated, scream less, get less involved. And then the other way is to just take over. And for me, thinking about Brian Daboll and thinking about the way he behaves and what we've seen from Brian Daboll over the course of the first 2 years as head coach of the New York Giants, and whether or not he's capable of the former, I don't know. I don't know if he's capable of it. Some coaches aren't. And as great as Mike Kafka has been, and as much respect I have for him, and I'm hoping one day he gets a head coaching job. When you finish the year like last year, when you lose the way they've lost, when there's the turmoil that they had, when his coaching ability has been questioned to that level after winning coach of the year in year one, after knowing this franchise has fired head coach after head coach after head coach after two seasons, to get a third is no guarantee, and here he is. So to get a fourth, forget about it. He needs to win. He might not have to make the playoffs. He might not have to win a championship. But he has to have a winning group. They can't be 0-6. They can't be 1-4. They can't start their year that way. And Brian Daboll was a play caller for the Buffalo Bills and developed Josh Allen and called plays for them. And that's why we hired him. That's why the Giants brought him here. The Giants brought him here, yes, because they believed in his abilities to lead the group and be a leader of men. That's what all head coaches have to be. But he was brought here specifically because he turned a young project quarterback into one of the best in the NFL. And his play calling ability led one of the better offenses in all of football. So if he is going to be at a crossroads of this team, and if this team itself is going to be at a crossroads on how they handle this last year of Daniel Jones's try year, or of adding neighbors, fixing the offensive line, expectations of having an offense and a group that is actually successful and can score points, then I want Brian Daboll to lead it. And I'm not concerned about the typical nonsense of head coaches can't be so involved in this. Yes, you can't have your head buried in the sand. And you have to be aware of game decisions, and you have to be aware of everything that's going on, and you can't immerse yourself in offense and forget everything else, especially with a new defensive coordinator. Although it's not his first time being a defensive coordinator. He's new to the Giants. You have to be aware of everything that's going on, obviously. But for me, Brian Daboll was brought here because of his expertise in calling plays and running an offense. And if he's uncomfortable giving that authority away, if he's uncomfortable handling it on the sidelines while other men make the decision overall of calling the play, and he's unable to control himself on the headset, and he's unable to remove himself from it on some level, then I don't want, on a important year, a crossroad year for this offense, I don't need my head coach trying to figure that out. Maybe one day he'll be in a position where he can try and figure that out. Right now, I want him comfortable. And if being comfortable means calling plays and running the offense, then that's exactly what he should do. That's exactly what he should do. This has got to be his team. He changed the dynamic of the group 2 years ago, and last year it fell apart on him, and it felt like he had trouble letting go of control and had trouble delegating responsibility, namely the play calling. And if that's a trouble for him, I appreciate that. And on some level, he's going to have to get better at that. But it doesn't have to be this year. And as much as that sucks for Kafka, he's still going to be an important piece. He's going to be a voice in the discussion. But ultimately, it's going to be on the head coach. And the head coach was brought here because of what he did in Buffalo, play calling, offensive ability. And when you listen to, and this is what, if we have the audio, this is Stefon Diggs doing a podcast talking about Brian Daboll. And Art Stapleton put it up. And as we see Le'Veon Bell killing Adam Gase for no reason, apparently just to have fun doing it, like, players know. Players get it. Players understand. And if the Giants are what I deem to be, and for Brian Daboll, and I saw in the clip of the 1 minute clip of the trailer, if you would say, of this Hard Knock show, he gets it. That it's New York, and if you don't win, you're out. And I don't want my coach adjusting. And if he has a tough time doing that, and if he has a tough time letting go of the play calling, then he should take it over. And just a quick sample of, I thought this was interesting, of Diggs talking about Brian Daboll's ability to call plays.
It's crazy because he has that creative Andy Reid, those guys that kind of like move all the pieces around, and it kind of just look like organized chaos. You know what I'm saying? The guys running open, and you know what I'm saying? And it's schematically. He won't take none of the credit, but he tries to give us all the credit. Like, it's you guys. I was like, listen, coach, you calling the right shit now. Yeah, like, you know what I'm saying? I ain't going to lie. You calling the right shit now. Yeah. He has plays throughout the game that's getting you open in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, we keeping some aces tucked. You know what I'm saying? Reneging a little bit just to be like, all right, when we got a cut, look, we got some shit on.
Yeah, so that's, now he's had his own problems at Buffalo since Brian Daboll has left, and now he's gone. He's no longer there. And the relationship between him and Josh Allen also just evaporated without Brian Daboll. And Josh Allen, while still having great moments, hasn't really looked as good as he did with Brian Daboll. And this is an important year for him. It's an important year for the quarterback. It's an important year just for the offense. They need to start playing offensive football. It's 2024. It's the age of offense. Now, there are defenses that are obviously talented, and defensive players get paid, no doubt. And yeah, you need to stop the run and all the cliches they'll throw at you. But you need to score points, and you need to have a passing game, and you need to throw touchdown passes to wide receivers. That's the NFL. The quarterback makes the quarterback signed for $40 million a year. And whether or not the Giants believe in this quarterback, whether or not you believe the story that they have buyer's remorse, whatever the case may be, he's going to be the quarterback this season. And this is what Brian Daboll does. So instead of an angry Brian Daboll walking up and down the sideline yelling at his coaches, instead of a frustrated Brian Daboll not liking what he sees but trying to be the head coach of the team, instead of Brian Daboll allowing this thing to fold without it being with his fingerprints all over it, let's let the guy that they brought here because of his play calling, because of his ability to work with a quarterback, let him do it all and let him fail or succeed. Let him sink or swim doing it his way, because I think last year we found out that while losing and while struggling, he can't do it any other way. So I know I'm making a big deal out of just play calling, but this Giant team, it's a crossroads right now of offensive football. And I don't want to see another coach gone. As much as the storyline of Bill Belichick waiting in the wings and his relationship to the Giants and him being the greatest head coach in the history of, you know, football, I get it all. And while it would be amazing to have Bill Belichick, but who knows if that happens. Ultimately, I want Brian Daboll to work out. I'm tired of hiring coaches. I don't think it's sustainable. I don't think it helps with long-term winning. I want Brian Daboll and Joe Shane to be here for a while. And that means scoring points. And that means winning some damn football games. And I honestly think, because of everything that came out last year, him not calling plays led to them losing football games and led to anarchy and led to a bunch of coaches having a problem with them and led to a bunch of different nonsense that this Giant team can't have to deal with this year. They need to forget all that. So run the damn show, Brian Daboll. It's on you. And then have no mistake. People seem to be upset with this concept. He's on the hot seat. That's why I'm talking about this. He is on the hot seat. If they lose, if they have another miserable season, if Daniel Jones sucks and this offense doesn't score any points, and if Neighbors looks like a talented wide receiver but ultimately doesn't do anything, if it looks like letting Saquon Barkley go is the reason the offense is completely inept, they're going to get fired. And the Giants can't afford to keep going through this cycle of coaching. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. So we opened it up to a little bit of football. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers is back from his trip to Egypt, apparently. So that was very important. He had to go to Egypt instead of being at camp. But don't worry, he made all of his UFC appearances. He went to all the fights he wanted to go to. So Aaron Rodgers is cool. So as we start to hopefully turn, you know, we'll start to turn the page. We're in the middle of this baseball season, but soon, before you know it, we're going to get some football news. And obviously tonight we'll get the opening episode of Hard Knocks Offseason Edition with the New York Giants. And we'll hear all about Saquon Barkley leaving and how great Daniel Jones is and how great his rehab is coming and how they can't wait to see him throw 12 touchdown passes this year. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Yes, sir! What's going on? McMonagle here with you. In the car, I just can't wait to pick you up on our very first date. I told you, this is when my sister was like, screw those guys. Every time I hear them, I think about that. And I'll give you another one that my sister will hate to admit at the moment right now. And I'm willing to say it out here. Don't wait. I have to admit, my sister was a big fan and turned me on to them. And really, it's only the one album. But I will argue this with people. No joke. And I consider myself a musical person on some level, with good taste in music, obviously. I'm a little bit more of a classic rock and rock music than I am other things, although I'm pumped for the new Eminem album coming out on the 12th. I'm a huge Eminem guy, always have been. I would not, you know, the new Eminem CD would go in the car, and it would not leave the CD player until I knew every word of the album. It was like a personal challenge. So I'm looking forward to another Eminem album. They're always great. I don't care what anybody says. It might not be stuff you could bump in the club. Might not be the catchiest of tunes. But to listen to that man and his wordplay is phenomenal. So I'm always excited for a new Eminem album. So I consider myself a very musically, you know, I don't know if inclined, because I don't play any instruments. I just sing. Wow, look how young Flaherty looks. Oh, my God. After the thinning hair we just saw all weekend. Yeah, oh, my God. And a young Sweeney Murdy, too. I got to call Sweeney. I haven't talked to Sweeney in a while. They all look so young. It's crazy. It's 20 years ago already. Anyway, when I was in 1996 or 1997, I will tell you this right now. One of the best albums of that year is Middle of Nowhere by Hanson. I'm not kidding. It's not. Yes, Umbop. Correct. That was the single from the album. That Hanson album kicks ass. I don't care what anybody says. It's true. They have a bunch of really good songs on that album. I still to this day listen to Hanson. I have no problem saying it. I'm not ashamed. I don't care what you think. Go back and listen to the album. There's a song called Yearbook, kicks ass. Madeline, kicks ass. Mbop is a little corny, but musically, it's pretty good. That Hanson album, and my sister, she's going to kill me for saying this, was big into Hanson for a little brief time. And she turned me on to the album. It's really good. In fact, I'm going to listen to it on the way home. Yesterday, I was listening to The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, and now I'll go to Hanson, two of the great albums of the 90s. 888-808-1019. It's true. Go listen to it. I dare you. I dare you. Hanson was good. I don't care what anybody says. 888-808-1019. Lou in Asbury Park. What's up, Lou?
T-Mac, what's up, buddy? How you
what's
doing?
What's up, brother? How are you?
Good. I got two quick questions for you, then I'll hang up and listen. One's on the Knicks, one's on the Giants. With the Knicks and I Heart, you know, I definitely don't think that he's a $30 million a year guy, but, you know, the market said that he is.
Yep.
With Mitchell Robinson now and OG in the starting lineup, that's essentially 40% of the starting lineup injury prone. What is your thoughts? Because I feel like we need a center. And we need somebody bad. The second part is with the Giants. I 100% agree with you. With Dable, here's my fear. They're staring at the Eagles twice, the Cowboys twice, and the AFC North.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, that could easily be eight losses. If the Giants are at an 8-10 loss season, is he gone? And I'll just listen to what you have to say then.
It depends on how they get there, how they look, how the wins look. Because you remember they play 17 games. All right, so if they, you know, when you say 8-10 loss, I mean theoretically, you know, an eight loss season is 9-8. He's not getting fired on that. If they lose 10 games, if they go 7-10, and the offense is productive, and you feel better about Daniel Jones moving forward in some way, and some of the games are tight, but you're right, they lose both to the Cowboys, who are clearly better. They lose both to Philadelphia, but they have some signature wins. They play okay. The Washington Commanders haven't jumped them, because that's another thing. I'm telling you right now, if this young quarterback steps up, and I'm sorry, your line is making some noise. But if Washington is somehow better than the Giants this year, if Washington beats the Giants this year and has a better record than the Giants this year, and they finish last place in the division, that's going to be a major, major problem for the New York Giants and Brian Daboll. That is going to be a problem, because that's been the one team they've been able to figure out. That's been the one team, even when it's worse, even when it's been at its worst, they have been able to figure out a way to play their best and beat Washington. Now, Washington has won a division in this time, but still, that was that miserable year where they won it, what, 6 wins and got beat by Tom Brady and Tampa Bay on the way to the Super Bowl. But if Jaden Daniels is a stud, and now they are looking at having the worst quarterback in the division, and we know Dak's future is up in the air in Dallas, and that's a name you hear connected to the Giants, which shocks me. I can't imagine that they would go from giving Daniel Jones a bad contract that ultimately becomes a problem, and then to move on with him by giving Dak the bag. I just can't imagine that. But it's everywhere. Every story I read about possible outcomes for the Giants at quarterback next year, Dak Prescott tops the list. I mean, I guess he tops the list of any team that would need a quarterback just because, you know, of his success and his numbers and the idea that he could be out there. But I would be shocked if the Giants went and brought in Dak Prescott. But that's for another time. But if Daniel steps up and he's the best, and clearly Daniel Jones is now the worst quarterback in the division, the offense doesn't play well, and they lose 10, 11 games, I definitely think Brian Daboll's job is on the line. 100% I do. 100%. This offense, and that's why I want him to take over, because he clearly wants to. Like, he clearly wants to do the play calling. You don't take it, give it back, take it, give it back, if you don't want to do it. You just don't. When you take it and give it back, take it and give it back, the taking is the part you really want to do. All right? Nobody, you know, it's not like, oh, I had no choice, I got to give it back. No, he wants it. And this year's important, and the offense is his, and the offense needs to be successful. Take over the whole shebang. I have no problem with it. That's exactly what should be done. Instead of trying to figure out how to go about being a head coach that doesn't call plays and, you know, coming to your senses and not being a maniac on the headset, I don't want you to have to worry about how to change your ways. I want you to go play call plays and win football games. But, yeah, I mean, there's a scenario where he gets fired. There's no doubt in my mind. 100%. Now, I don't know how to, you know, the schedule is always tough. It's the NFL. So, I mean, and we have no idea who's going to be good, who's going to be bad, but just yet. But I want to see offensive production. Like, that's the main thing. There's been no offense. I heard him talking today about Wendell Robinson. You got to get him involved. You got to get Robinson involved. You obviously got to get Hyatt involved. And then clearly you're hoping Neighbors can't be denied. And that this quarterback can get him the football. And that this offensive line can block for him. And then you got to establish some kind of running game, which I think you can, even without, you know, you don't need Saquon Barkley to have a running game. You don't need a great running back to have a running game. You got to incorporate it and figure it out. But, I mean, the problem is also defensively. I love their front seven. The rest of it's scary. You got an offensive line that's scary, a quarterback that's scary, a running back room that stinks. I mean, we'll see what they can do, but it's not very good. It's all right. It's good enough to run the football, but it's not dynamic playmaking like they've had over the last couple of years with Saquon Barkley. But defensive backs scare me. And they're going to have to get after the quarterback, which at least Bowen's defense allows that, as opposed to Wink Martindale, who didn't want a pass rush, who would blitz and drop his best pass rushers, which I hated, especially as they're losing. When you're winning, it doesn't bother you as much. When you're losing and you can't get after the quarterback, it's a problem. But I love Brian Daboll, and I'm looking forward to him figuring it out. And I trust him. I think he's a good head coach. I don't think last year he forgot how to be a good head coach. I think just when circumstances start going like that and the ball rolls out of control and then you lose your quarterback and suddenly you're playing catch-up with, you know, literally a guy who sells tomato sauce, it's a problem. Can't play catch-up with a guy who sells tomato sauce. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. I felt like I had more music. What were we just talking about with music?
Well, I was going to ask you what your favorite Eminem song was.
Oh, my favorite Eminem song. I mean, I guess I have to go with just Till I Collapse. It's an easy answer, kind of, but it's the one song that, like, because I for me it was the Eminem Show that is his best. Like, the first album, I kind of, it's funny too, because I dismissed him with Hi, My Name Is. It's like one of my least favorite Eminem songs. I think it's stupid. I don't like it. I don't like the hook. I don't like anything of it. So when he first was, you know, the new white rapper comes out and he does, "Hi, my name is," I was like, who's this idiot? And then I listened to the album and kind of liked it. And then the second album came out and it was unbelievable. And then I went back and listened to the first album. But for me, the Eminem Show is really his best. So Till I Collapse, I've always been fond of the, you know, White America is really good. And then, they're all good. But what's the other one that has the circus feel to it? Why can't I think of the name of the song? Doesn't matter. It's been so freaking long. But I'm looking forward to the new album. And anytime Eminem drops an album, really, there's only a couple of current bands. Like, I talked about this. I don't think they've broken up. I know one guy left. Mumford & Son is when they release a new album, I will actually pay for it. Eminem releases the new album, I will pay for it. That's really about it. Paul McCartney releases a new album, I'll pay for it just because he's my guy. And I'm going to miss him. Like, I think about that way too often. I'm a weird guy.
One thing, Eminem, his biggest flex, I thought his album was Revival, because if you look at the list of features on it, where it's Beyonce and Pink and Ed Sheeran and ex-ambassador, every single person, and they tell the stories, they said he came to them and said, "I wrote a song specifically for you."
Right.
And so they all said, of course, yes.
Well, people hate that album, though.
Right. I think it is his biggest flex that, like, hey, I got this list of people.
Right.
But the other thing is tying Derek Jeter and Eminem together.
Mariah Carey.
Square Dance.
Square Dance. That's the one song I was talking about. Yeah.
So how does that song start? It's like, I'm back or whatever.
Yeah.
So he came up to that when he came back from injury a couple of times when he was hurt in, 2012, 2013?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember first pitch of an at-bat against the Rays, he hits the home run after coming out to that song. I was at the game. That's why I remember it. I remember it felt fake. Like, that was peak Derek Jeter for me, you know?
Yeah. Peak Derek Jeter for you, coming back from the ankle injury in 2013. We have different
peaks.
No, that's
not peak. Again,
we have different peak Derek Jeters.
But to me, just like he ends his career with a walk-off, which is dumb.
Oh, no,
but
he's crazy. Yeah, Derek Jeter's the ultimate.
He
comes
up, and the first pitch, he hits an opposite field home run.
No. Yeah, no, he had that in him. There's no doubt. He had that just special factor of being able to come through in the... And you know what? To tie it to the Mets for a second, I think the Mets have someone like that. I think you're seeing Francisco Alvarez have that kind of feel to him. Francisco Alvarez kind of has that feel. Now, I'm not comparing him to Derek Jeter necessarily, but it just feels like he's going to come through with the big hit. And in this game last night, the Taylor ground ball goes right through the legs of Abrams at shortstop. And you just know that Alvarez is going to put one in the gap or over the wall. Like, he's really starting to emerge. And if you look at him, the control he has over the pitchers and of all the things that when we go LOL Mets, right? And the Yankees too, with misreading things and being wrong about things and mischaracterizing things. And the idea that Francisco Alvarez wasn't up with the Mets earlier because they didn't trust him defensively almost makes me laugh now. Because the guy is so freaking good defensively. Like, and he has such a presence about him. And as a young kid already, is someone who controls a pitching staff at a Molina-like level. It's crazy. The positive reinforcements he gives, the knowing when to go out there and have a conversation, when to give the pitcher a break, never mind his skill sets, which I think he's shown to be a very good defensive catcher with a, you know, maybe not a world-class arm, but a damn good arm. I remember in the Yankee broadcast talked about he's not a great thrower. I was like, I think Alvarez is a very good thrower of the baseball. I think he's damn good. I mean, that's one of the more misreads. Like, they were waiting because they knew he could hit, but they weren't sure about him defensively. I feel better about him defensively than I do with the bat. Now, he's terrific back there. He's terrific. And with the bat, he comes with slumps, and that's all what catchers do, and we'll see what happens. He had some time off with an injury this year. Might be a blessing in disguise where his legs can be a little bit stronger as the season goes down, because especially young kids aren't used to playing these many games. And, you know, catching all this time, you see catchers slump at the tail end of the year. It's a very normal thing. And catchers go through bumps and bruises that will lead to slumps. So his bat will come and go. I don't think he'll have one of those years where he just hits consistently all year long. It'll be up, it'll be down. He'll have moments where he's hot, but he shows up in the big moments. He feels like a de facto leader of the team, and they've talked about it. Like, he's giving off a little bit of Jeter vibes. A little bit of Jeter vibes. And, you know, right now, he's as important a reason and as big a reason why I think that Stearns and Cohen or anybody else should feel really good about this team moving forward and should be willing to bolster it and go out there and make trades, and that those questions shouldn't be asked anymore. Like, I know they almost blew a 6-run lead. I know where the bullpen is, but look at the offense. Look at the 6 runs they scored. Look at the way they bounce back. Look at the every time you give them an inch, they take a foot. I love that about this team. I love that about good offenses. That's exactly what you want. You made an error. You just blew it. You had us, and you let it slip through your fingers. Now we're going to get you. I love that aspect of an offense. You need that. It's a bully mentality. It's a bully mentality. And this Met offense has it right now. And it's crazy considering where they were at the start of the year. It was a disaster. And now they feel like they're bullies. And they're going to get you. And you know what? You let that ground ball go through your legs, we're going to get you. You know what? You had a chance to win the game with a runner on second and nobody out. You didn't do it. Now we're putting up 6. Like, that's a bully mentality. And, I mean, for me, watching this team, the story of this game is how bad the bullpen is and how good everything else can be and how they need to fix this bullpen and forget everything else. Forget about buying and selling and any other nonsense. Go out there and improve this bullpen. And now you have the starting depth, right? If you want to go get a starter and put the same way I'm talking about the Yankees possibly doing this, you want to add a starter and move a starter to the bullpen, fine. Do that. Do that. But bolster this team and bolster its pitching. And if you got Senga coming back and you got Scott and you got Lucchese and you got Buto and you feel good about all of those, don't give me, well, I can sell Severino. Give me, now I can move someone to the bullpen. Now I have an answer at a hole. Don't try and create more holes. That I hate. Let's get back to the calls. Kenny in Queens. What's up, Kenny?
Hey, how's it going, Chris?
Good, buddy. How are you?
You just answered everything I was going to ask you.
That's okay.
Like with the Mets bullpen, how bad they are.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, it's terrible. And the Yankee starters, the Yankee starter pitching is really bad also. Not as bad as the Mets bullpen, obviously. But how do they fix this? What pitches can you even go out to get? Yeah, I mean, who's out there?
Who's out there? As far as bullpen guys?
No. The Yankees bullpen is nowhere near as bad as the Mets.
Only because right now they don't have Diaz. At least right now I feel somewhat okay with, I mean, I feel still pretty good about Clay Holmes. I know the Yankee fan base feels differently than I suppose. But they got Clay Holmes
all day and every day.
They got Holmes. Tonkin's been really good. Weaver's been fairly good. And Canely, you know, it has been all right, but I still kind of trust them. So at least, yeah, I have 4 relievers that I feel somewhat okay about.
But they're starting pitching, though.
Well, I mean, the starting pitching was the best in the American League for 2 months, and now it's gone through twice through the rotation where it's been god-awful.
Unfortunately, that guy
Luis Gil
is phenomenal.
We'll find out.
Pitched over 80 innings a year.
We'll find out tonight. Yeah, no, he's never has. And, I mean, it's a big start for him, clearly, against the Reds. And we'll see what he has. But I don't, just because, like, there's no guarantee that the guys hit some sort of wall. I mean, eventually they'll get there. You're right. Hardly any innings. I think it's literally like 7 over the last 2 years. So it's like he hasn't pitched any innings. We'll see. He claims he's strong. He claims he feels good. It is possible the guy just, you know, is out of whack. He's a young pitcher. They're allowed to have bad starts. And the last one wasn't god-awful. He had a god-awful one against the Mets. But it wasn't like, you know, against the Orioles, but it wasn't like Mets start wasn't just like ridiculously bad. It just wasn't that good. Now he's got to figure it out.
The fielding wasn't too good either in that game. The Mets bullpen, though, to me, and I'm a Mets fan.
I think both bullpens need major help.
Oh, my God. But where do you get it? Where is there to go? Now, again, you were saying before, a starting pitcher, you know, Hauser pitched yesterday. Yes. And he did well. He did well.
Hauser's been pretty good once they put him in the bullpen. I mean, he's had his moments, but he's pitched fairly well. But he's their long guy. You're not going to. What's that?
Out of the bullpen, yeah. Yes.
No, once they moved him to the bullpen and took him out of the rotation, he's pitched fairly well. And they have options if they want to do that where they take other guys, and thank you for the call, as they take other guys out of the rotation and put in the bullpen. Theoretically, there's a couple of guys you could try. You could try McGill there as they sent him down, but you could try other guys out in the bullpen. Right now they're limited. They're down one guy in the bullpen as long as Diaz is suspended. You're only allowed to carry 12 pitchers right now. But where do you get it from? Yeah, that's the question. Because right now in the National League, there's two teams. So you got to look at the Marlins, who obviously have a closer who's going to be one of the premier guys on the market, I would think. And then you got to look at the Rockies. Excuse me. That's it. I mean, that's really it. Right now, you're going to have to see what teams fall out. And then in the American League, you know, the Angels have gotten hot. I still would consider them sellers. Obviously, Oakland's a seller. Obviously, Chicago's a seller. There's probably a couple more sellers in the American League, but there's going to be a ton of buyers. And with the importance of relief pitching, everybody's looking for it. It'll be who's the most desperate for it and who has the most chips for it, who's got the most pieces for it. And that's why I'm concerned. I mentioned the starting rotation market, which I don't know if the Yankees would dabble in just yet. I am not off the deep end on their starting rotation. I understand everybody is. I understand we're all going crazy about it. It's been bad the last couple times through. I'm not overly concerned about this starting rotation. I'm not. It's only a couple times through. I want to see what happens. But if it comes to a point where they're looking to trade and acquire a starting pitcher, the biggest problem is going to be Baltimore, who clearly needs a starting pitcher. And then, honestly, if the Astros get back in this thing and Verlander is still having issues with his neck, then the injuries they're dealing with, I could see them being in the starting pitching market. So they'll be, you know, at this trade deadline, everyone's going to be asking for something. And you know what? That brings me to a question I had, because I'm very confused by this. It doesn't make any sense to me. With the way the Verlander trade went down between the Mets and the Astros, and Gary Cohen said this on the broadcast the other day. I'd heard it prior. I knew about it prior, but he reinforced it and said it again. There is a line of demarcation of, I believe, 140 innings. And if Verlander pitches 140 innings for the Astros, the Mets have to kick in more money. So it's helping the Mets right now that Verlander is out and not pitching, because it's less money that they have to give the Astros. So theoretically, as they're trying to get money off the books here, as they're waiting for this Scherzer and Verlander money to get off the books, if Verlander pitches 140, there's less money coming off the books because they got to pay the Astros more. If he pitches under 140, then there's more money coming off the books because they have to pay the Astros less. Now, does that make any sense really to you? Like, I'm baffled by it, because you would think, like, the more the Astros get out of Verlander, the better, right? Am I wrong? Do I have it backwards here?
I think the reason you might have it backwards is because maybe there's a bonus in his contract.
Right.
That if he pitches over 140 innings,
yeah,
he gets that bonus. And so Astros were saying.
But I guess. But like, typically it's like, okay, if he pitches more, then, you know, I'll
pay him more.
Yeah, I'll pay him more. Why would it be if when you make a trade with someone, it's like, oh, if we get to the championship game, or if he helps us get to a World Series, then we'll take on more of it, or the picks become lesser. Like, why would the Astros be like, oh, screw it, if he pitches more innings, we'll, you know, we want more money. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Well, it's backwards.
The Astros probably said, we're willing to pay up to this amount no matter what.
Right.
And so if he hits these bonuses, that's your bonuses that you guys put in there, so you right. have to pay those.
I guess that's what happened. But it's still, like, I would think if I was negotiating with the Astros, I'd be like, the more he pitches for you, the more you have to take on. Now, it's going to help the Mets because it's less money. But I typically, when you make deals like this, the more he benefits the team he's traded to, the more they'll take on. It's if I'm the Astros, like, hey, all right, yeah, I know you're giving me some money, but if this guy hardly pitches next year, you got to kick in more. Like, that's what makes sense to me in my head. But you're right, if he hits some sort of target bonus and they were just like, I'm not including bonuses in our deal here, I suppose. But in my head, it just doesn't make – it's confusing because the Astros should be like, well, if he hardly pitches, you got to kick in more money, not the opposite.
Well, think about it from this perspective, that when the Mets are trading him away, so yeah. they're saying, we want guaranteed – the max that you're willing to kick in, that the Astros are willing to kick in, right? So right. let's say it was $12 million that the Astros were willing to kick in. If the Astros had tied it to the incentive, then there was a chance the Mets would have gotten less money. So the Mets were basically saying, don't tie it to the incentives. Give us the max no matter what.
Right.
And that way we get it the max so either way.
And then once the incentives hits, we'll pay.
We'll still pay it, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, I guess that makes sense. But it didn't compute. With the idea of, because typically the Astros are happy he pitches, and so they should be willing to pay more for it. That's typically how the deals work. But you're right, if they didn't tie it to incentives and he's going to hit some sort of bonus that they'll be forced to pay, I guess that's how it works. But it just, when he said it on the broadcast, I'm like, that doesn't make sense. The Astros should be willing to pay more if they get more and pay less if they get less, but it's working the other way around. All right. Doesn't matter much. Right now, it looks like it's going to benefit the Mets, and they're going to hit free agency with all kinds of money looking to buy Juan Soto. You know it's coming. They're going to steal him from the Yankees after the Yankees flame out and have a miserable season and lose pretty much every series the rest of the way here and fall on their face, and yet they'll still keep Aaron Boone and Brian Cashman. Don't you worry about it. And then Juan Soto will go, I got to get the hell out of here and go to where there's good vibes. And I like to sing songs and dance around. So I'm going to go to the Mets. That's right. We all know it's coming. 888-808-1019. We haven't really touched on the Yankees all that much. I talked about it yesterday with the Stroman stuff and the nature of what needs to happen here and the idea that finally there was some frustration shown. And the idea that maybe that's still an issue, even though it seemed like a positive after the win. And that's what, it's amazing what things change. And that's why the Juan Soto home run the other day on a 3-0 count was so important. Because that game felt like they were about to just, not only are they losing, but they're falling apart. You had obviously Carlos Rodon the night before screaming at Ben Rice for letting the squibber down the line hit the bag. Now you got Marcus Stroman screaming at Gleyber Torres. He's going nuts in the dugout. They're losing in the game. And it just felt like if this game and this series is lost and you've got them fighting with each other, it just felt like, man, this thing is falling apart. And I remember thinking to myself, Aaron Boone has the toughest job of his career on his hands right now. Because this was a team with expectations. This was a team that was winning. Now they're falling apart. They're arguing with each other. You got starting pitchers blaming the infielders, it's a major problem. And then Juan Soto hit that home run, and suddenly it was like, that's just what we needed. A little bit of feistiness, a little bit of holding people accountable. Hell, it almost made Gleyber Torres a sympathetic figure as the fan base is killing him, and then he comes out and hits a couple home runs, a home run and a couple of hits, and now he's got 6 hits in the last 3 games. And away we go. Until Luis Hill gives up 7 runs tonight. So we'll see what happens. 888-808-1019. We'll get into the Yankees a little bit. We've talked about pretty much everything else. If you want to talk about Hartenstein, obviously the Met game last night, the bullpen, how they almost imploded and gave up a 6-run lead in extra innings, but they do win a very important game against the Washington Nationals in this 8-game road trip where they play the Nationals and the Pirates, who they're competing with in this wild card. And that would have been a devastating loss. So, yes, they almost blew a lead, but they managed to win a game. The offense continues to play bully ball. And if I'm Stearns, I'm making sure I fix this bullpen instead of wondering what this team. I've answered the questions if I'm the Mets. They've told me enough already. I have to go out there and help them. So we got the Yankees with an important home series to try and just get back into their winning ways against an inferior Cincinnati team, but they haven't been able to beat anybody lately. We got Hartenstein going to the Thunder and not the Knicks as the rest of the East gets better. The Giants on Hard Knocks tonight, and Brian Daboll taking over the play calling. Rangers not doing as much as people would have hoped in the first day of free agency. All that on the table and more over the next 2 hours as I take it till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. 888-808-1019. Quick break. Marco will come back, take your phone calls.